Thanks for joining us here on The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. All this week on the show, we've heard from hundreds of women, listeners, with your stories of enduring sexual harassment or assault.
The first time I can remember this happening, I was living a soccer game in Miami, Florida. The crowds were letting out. It was very crowded, and somebody stuck their hand up my skirt. I was 13 years old.
In 1978, I worked in a Greek fast food hamburger joint. The owner would constantly corner us in the walk-in refrigerator and wouldn't let us out until we gave him a kiss.
I'm not comfortable leaving my name, but I'm calling from New York, and I was raped, and nobody believed me, and I just never reported it to the police, and it was a hard time when I was a very young girl at the age of 17.
Women's experiences pouring out after news of years of abuse by Harvey Weinstein, and before him, Roger Ailes, and before him, Bill O'Reilly, and the list goes on. But our next guest says it's not women, but men who should confront systemic sexual harassment and predatory behavior.
If we want to prevent sexual harassment, sexual assault, domestic violence, relationship abuse, and that whole range of issues, we have to really focus on the perpetrators and the society that's producing them.
That's Jackson Katz, co-founder of Mentors in Violence Prevention and author of The Macho Paradox. Katz argues that thinking and talking about domestic violence, sexual abuse, and harassment as women's issues misses a critical point, that the perpetrators usually are men and that men need to influence their peers to change.
The challenge is to move beyond thinking about, okay, we're going to punish this new, you know, this perpetrator who's now emerged, and we're going to figure out if we can prosecute, if we can hold this person accountable, and then we move on until the next scandal happens, as opposed to thinking about how can we systematically embed, you know, prevention programming and sensibility in, you know, K-12 education, in colleges and universities, in the military, in the workplace, in politics, business, everywhere.
Well, Jackson, you talk about how pervasive this problem is, and it gets even more basic. I mean, you talk about the language that we use when we talk about sexual harassment and sexual assault in the first place. Describe that.
Yeah, well, so often the very way we think and talk about these subjects keeps us in the old paradigm, what I refer to as the old paradigm of seeing these issues as women's issues that good men help out with. There's so much about the language that we use to talk about this subject that keeps us in the old paradigm. So, for example, the use of the passive voice, which is pervasive in discussions about gender violence. So we talk about how many women were raped last year rather than how many men raped women. Or we talk about how many girls were sexually harassed last year in a school district rather than how many boys sexually harassed girls or how many girls sexually harassed girls. We talk about how many teenage girls got pregnant last year rather than how many men and boys impregnated teenage girls. Even the term violence against women is a passive construction. There's no active agent in the sentence. It's almost like a bad thing that happens to women, violence against them, but nobody's doing it to them because there's no active agent in the sentence. So the very language that we use structures our way of thinking about these subjects that keeps our attention off of the, honestly, the group with more power. And that's how power functions, by shifting, in this case, by shifting accountability off of itself. So part of the political act that has to happen is rethinking the very way that we're thinking and using language to keep us in the old paradigm.
And in your view, that shift of language can represent a shift of thinking or a shift of reference when it comes to sexual abuse.
Yes, and it shines the spotlight. If you turn the spotlight around onto men, and you, instead of saying violence against women, you say men's violence against women, or saying instead of saying how many women were raped, you say how many men raped women. While it's not a perfect one-to-one ratio, people will point out that, you know, the average rapist rapes many more than one victim, so it's not a one-to-one ratio. At the same time, by shifting the focus of the language, it puts the accountability back where it belongs, and then the subsequent discussions about the solutions don't entail victim-blaming solutions like tell women to dress more conservatively or don't drink as much at a party or all the kinds of ways that we blame women for what men do to them. Part of the reason why we do that is the language guides us towards thinking about the women and her issues and her decisions rather than turning it around where it should be on the men, and not just the men individually, but the culture that produces those men. Because ultimately, the most productive discussions that we could have in our society about reducing sexual violence and domestic violence and harassment is not about individual perpetration. It's about social norms. It's about institutional practices. It's about what is considered acceptable and normative in male culture for men to, how do men and women to act, the role that media plays in that, the role that other institutions play in perpetuating certain kinds of norms. All of this requires a level of both personal and institutional and societal introspection that is difficult. And as a result, I think people are more likely to and more inclined to blame the victims, talk about the women and girls, and not even engage in a discussion like we're having right now about men and boys and the culture that produces them.
Jackson, you're calling for a real cultural shift in the way that men think about, approach, and talk to each other about sexual abuse and assault. I'm going to guess that you've gotten some pretty negative reaction and some abuse yourself for speaking out about this.
Well, I have to say, Todd, we've been working right in the heart of male culture for a long time. And yes, there is some pushback, but I'd say more likely guys will come into these discussions with their arms folded and a little bit skeptical, like, what are we going to hear? Yet another session of, you know, male bashing or being told about how bad we are or what the rules are that we're not following. They don't leave with that. I think you can talk empathetically with men. You can talk honestly with men. You can get men to have open dialogues about their experiences of being often policed into conformist silence with behavior that they don't like. A lot of men go along with behavior that they don't like within male culture, not because they're necessarily supportive of that behavior, but because they make decisions consciously or unconsciously that the costs to them, if they speak up within their peer culture, within their friendship circles, in their workplaces, those costs might be, you know, higher than they're willing to pay. And they themselves aren't willing to take the leadership to take the risk of standing up and speaking out. And when they hear other men saying, okay, it's time that we speak up. And when they hear, whether it's facilitators in a workshop or their colleagues or men in the public space, the more that they hear men talking about this and standing up about and standing with women as their allies and partners, and the more men can realize that this is not about bashing men. It's about pushing men and encouraging men to rise to the highest level of their aspirations for themselves. Because most men want to see themselves as good people who speak up in the face of injustice. They want to see themselves as somebody who, when they see something wrong, they see somebody being mistreated, that they're going to be somebody who will step up. But I think they need support and encouragement because there are so many powerful forces in male culture that keep them silent.
That's Jackson Katz, co-founder of Mentors in Violence Prevention. Jackson, we appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me on, Todd.
This is Steve from the Lower East Side. For men to stop sexual assault, they have to stop joking about it. They have to stop accusing that the accused didn't do it because he's such a nice guy. And most importantly, they have to stop doing it.
This is Ken Ebert from Albany, New York. I believe that one thing we can do is men must be open to understanding that sexual harassment and assault does occur and accept the role that we play in this. Second, we must learn what of our behavior constitutes harassment and be willing to change. And finally, we need to work to empower women wherever we can.
What role do you think men should play? We've been asking you all this hour. You can call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. You can join the conversation, as always, on our Facebook page and visit our website at thetakeaway.org. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Todd Zwillick. This is The Takeaway.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With three updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.